All right, this is Lowell Smale's interview, tape number two, side number one, continuing to talk about the engine house. Anything else about running the engine?
Okay, this might be interesting to some people. When we're talking about the skips and counterbalancing each other, on Sundays, they generally went down on the skips and did repair work on certain levels. Say, sixth level, they had a bad piece of iron or something in the shaft. The men would have a platform on top of the skip, and they'd work off of that. They'd cut bolts or whatever they had to do. Then when you come up on the skip, they'd ring us up. The engineer would hoist that one up, and the other one was supposed to go down. Well, one day, I was on the cage side, and they were working in it, and the engineer on the skips, I could see he was putting too much power on to bring that skip up. And, of course, the rope on the other one was going down, but I didn't know it at first, but he kept putting more power, and I seen it. I had a skip load or a cage load of men coming up, so I got them to surface, stopped it. Just as I ran over to tell him to stop, the counterbalance skip had been stuck up close to the top, left go, and it went right to the bottom and smashed the rope, smashed the skip and everything. But
the men were safe.
Oh yeah, the men were safe because they were on the other skip that was coming up. But they were scared.
How many men?
There was six of them working on the skip.
So the men, there were six of them on top of the upward bound skip, and you could see them coming up, and they weren't in the cage. You saw this from the cage?
No, I was in the engine house.
Okay.
I was running the cage hoist. See, we had two hoists.
Okay.
And I could see the engineer on the skips was giving too much electrical power to his motors to bring that skip up. So I knew something was wrong with the other one, but it just got going too fast. And finally that one that was stuck left go after it got that rope piled on top of it, or the cable piled on top of it, went right down. And when it came to the end of the rope, it just broke the cable and down it went.
Did you have the impression that the six men who were coming up knew what was going on at the time?
I was afraid for them because I was afraid of that busted rope going down, swaying, might go over and hit them or something. Because between the two skips, there's nothing. There's just every so often a piece of angle iron going across the shaft. But
so you could see that the rope on the downward bound skip was broken?
Eventually we did, yeah.
Okay. Was there any indication of why the other engineer was applying too much power? Did he sense that there was something wrong and felt some urgency to get these men up?
He didn't sense that something was wrong. Because if he had, he could have stopped that skip that was coming up, take it back down to where he was to begin with, and then we could have got a hold of the other men that were down in underground to go and check and see what was wrong. Or we could have got them men off of that skip and brought them over on the cage side, you might say, and then found out what was wrong. But he wasn't thinking. He just kept giving it more power. And I couldn't leave my seat on the skip or on the cage hoist because I had men in the cage coming up. You can't hang them in the middle of the shaft and get them scared, you know. So we got them up all right, but the guys that were on the skip, they were pretty scared. I don't blame them.
Did you talk to any of those guys after they came up, or did they say anything about it that you recall?
Well, we talked to them, but like they said, something might have got in between the skip. They had rails in there that the skips ran on more or less to keep them centered. They figured maybe a piece of dirt fell in there or something, and that's what caused it.
Now, This crew of guys, the ones that would do repairs and stuff, were these just people that wanted to pick up an extra shift, or was there a regular crew that did repairs? How did that work?
They had regular crews that did the shaft repair because they were more experienced at it. Okay. They worked together so long that they knew what each other was doing, more or less.
Mm-hmm. Now, other than this one incident, was there anything else that you thought was interesting that you liked about being the engineer? It sounds like this is something that really tweaked your interest a lot, that you really enjoyed doing a lot.
Well, I enjoyed it, but sometimes the noise got to you, you know. At the end of the day, your ears would be throbbing. And
what was the noise like?
Well, high-pitched sounds. Motors running at high speed, Ned. Like the cage was 1,700 feet a minute that traveled. The skip traveled 3,400 feet a minute. So there was awful lot of grinding and groaning in there.
Now, in the engine house, there would be just then the two engineers, the one for the cage and the one for the skip?
And one floor man. He generally... floor man, he worked day shift all the time. He took care of the air compressors, and he mopped the floors and swept the floors around. Then he relieved us to go to the bathroom or have dinner or stuff like that.
And then there would be a cage operator and a skip operator, skip engineer on every shift?
Right.
Now, during this time, from the time that you started, did you pretty much work three shifts, or was it just that one time when you were doing the mucking that you were working night shift?
No, I worked three shifts in the engine house, too. Even skipped in the house three shifts.
So that was then rotating day, afternoon, evening?
Right. I didn't mind the rotation so much.
All right, so then engineering you did for about how long, and then what?
Well, I'd say roughly 3 years. And then the mines went into a slump, more or less. And they transferred some of us over to the Bunker Hill mine in Nagani.
And were you transferred to the Bunker Hill?
I was transferred to the Bunker Hill.
About what year was that?
Late 57, 58. That was a nasty place to work. That was one of the wet mines. And it was pretty well played out, but they were trying to get a little more ore out of it. And we were down there more or less stealing the ore, but we could get the hoist up.
Why did you say stealing the ore?
Well, you took it where you could get it. They had experimented down there at the Bunker Hill with a big auger. It was roughly, I'd say, 6 feet in diameter. They went in and with this, and they pulled this dirt out, pulled it out, pulled it out. Then they got so they couldn't pull no more out, it got too heavy on it. So they pulled the auger out, then they put us in there with scrapers to scrape out what dirt we could. And oh, that was a wet spot.
So it was heavy and muddy?
It was heavy and muddy and wet, sometimes over your boots. That much water in there. Then I got on a different shift with a different boss from Nagani. And we worked with him for midnights most of the time. And instead of having a motor man, he'd run the motor. And he'd tell us how many cars he wanted for the night. He'd tell us where to go and scrape. We'd go in and scrape. He'd come in, we'd load the cars, he'd take them out shaft, dump them, bring the cars back, then we'd get them all loaded. If we had a good night, maybe in 6 hours we would have got our limit out. Then he'd call us out shaft, we'd all go, and he'd stay there with us, and we'd sit around and talk and that, and maybe do a little something out there. But he was a good boss to work for.
Do you think that having him let you work that way made that pretty tolerable, where it might not have been otherwise?
It made the evening go by faster.
Now, you said that there was so much water and stuff that it was sometimes over your boots, so then you couldn't really see where the tracks were and stuff like that under all the water?
Well, you couldn't see the tracks at all. You had a feel for them. Guess where they were when you were walking in and out. But when we were working for this guy on Midnight, that was a drier side of the Bunker Hill. And it was more dangerous in a way, because one of the bosses on day shift got killed walking in there one day from where we were hauling the ore out on Midnight. And it wasn't long after he got killed that one night I was up in this place working, scraping, and the poles behind me start getting closer. I couldn't figure out what was going on. I didn't pay no attention to it. I just leaned over and got my quart of dirt out, and went down, and we had supper, and I went back up, and I didn't have no place to work. And I caved in. So that was only the really bad spot I had down there.
Was that the closest call that you ever had?
Nah. I don't know.
We can get to that later if there was another one.
Well, it wasn't too bad.
How did you feel when you came back to that spot that you'd been working in and saw that it wasn't there anymore?
I was very scared. I was glad I wasn't in there when I came in. Because they never did repair that spot again. They just left it go. Because they were getting ready to shut the mine down anyway, so.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that one of the bosses had gotten killed. What happened to him?
Well, he was walking in the back of the drift, the roof of the drift, just came in. No warning at all. Squashed him. That's it. He was a good boss, though. In fact, he was a second captain. And it was just one of them things.
This would have been in the late 50s?
That was in the late 50s, yeah.
Well then, how long, you worked in the Bunker Hill then for how long?
Not very long, maybe 6 months.
And so the two experiences that you described with being in the one section that was really wet and then with the other boss on Midnights were pretty much your experience
right.
At the Bunker Hill. Okay, so.
And they had big rats on the Bunker Hill. That's the first place I've seen rats in a mine. They were big. They were bigger than these little dogs.
How big?
Oh, a good-sized beagle. 18, 19 inches long, 20 inches long.
How often would you encounter rats, and what would you do?
Well, you wouldn't encounter them too often, but when you did, you grabbed whatever you had handy and tried to kill them. Yeah, they were so big. In the bottom of the shaft at the bunker, you could look down there when you went down and got down close to the bottom, and you see all these big dead rats floating on the water on there. They fall in and drown.
How many levels down was the Bunker Hill, do you remember?
I don't remember offhand. I'd say 7. Seven or eight. Anyway, there's 200 feet between levels, and the first level was down about 900 feet from surface, if I remember right.
Then, after the Bunker Hill, then what?
Then we got laid off, and then I went to work at Republic on construction.
You were laid off for how long?
Ooh. I'd say a good 3 years. Worked on construction at the Republic, then worked on construction at the Empire. And then I got working for the CCI again at the Empire, driving trucks.
So approximately, how long at the Republic doing construction, how long at the Empire doing construction, and how long then at the Empire driving truck?
Well, I'd say I worked a year and a half at Republic Construction, maybe a year at the Empire, and went truck driving at the Empire.
And so then at that point you were rehired by Cleveland Cliffs?
Yes, we were rehired, a bunch of us.
When you did construction then, was that was there a contractor that you worked for?
Yes, we worked for contractors.
And then you worked at the Empire driving truck until you retired?
No, I worked in the pit stripping for roughly a year and a half. And then they had some older men they wanted to put on the trucks, so they put them on the trucks, and they put younger men different jobs. And I went in the mill for 9 months, I'd say. And then there was a posting in the garage, so I applied for that, and I got it, so I ended up being a diesel mechanic. Finished out my term as a diesel mechanic.
And you retired when?
Let's see, 71? 11 years ago.
Since my focus is mostly on what happened underground, it might be a good time to segue into something else. Let's talk just a little bit about the rats at the Bunker Hill Mine and how you think they got in there and how you think they survived.
All right. I think some of them fell in, but some of them, from what I experienced at the Matheray, one night I was in the timber tunnel helping to load the cage with timber, and there was a muskrat on the timber truck. So we sent him down too with the timber. So we don't know what happened to him. So I think at the Bunker Hill, the same thing happened. The rats got in there, in the timber. The timber trucks went down in the cage, and they got down there, and then they got off. And then they'd eat whatever the men threw out of their lunch pails, or each other, whatever, I don't know.
Do you recall there being much litter in the mines from lunch pails and different things like that?
Not too much, because everything got more or less scraped in with the ore.
A few impurities here and there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Anything else you want to add for tonight?
Well, some of the rats in the Bunker Hill might have came from one of the old mines that were shut down in Nagani across the road from the bunker.
That was connected to the Bunker Hill?
That was connected.
What mine would that be?
Nagani mine. I'm pretty sure the Nagani. Nagani or the Athens. They were both close together there. Because when we were kids, the Nagani mine caved in once, and a bunch of the farmers' cows went down in the pit when it caved in. So we were over there watching them hoist the cows out after everything settled. And you could see these big rats down there running around then, so.
I have to ask, did any of the cows survive the cave-in?
Yes, some of them did. They got some of them.
Let's just take a minute while you're on the subject of growing up. You grew up in Nagani.
Yes.
And there were a couple of two or three mines there. Do you have any recollections about the guys that would be your father's age and any of the stories that they might have mentioned about the mining experiences that they had?
Not so much. My dad worked at the Mary Charlotte for a while. He drove mules down there. And the mules would get so used to their route that they'd go in and so many times a day and come out so many times a day. And if you tried to make them go in another time, they wouldn't go. Or if you added an extra car onto their string, they wouldn't pull it. They were so used to so much, and that was it. And then they had a harness made that bring the mules every so often out to the shaft, put them in this harness, hook a cable or rope on the bottom of the cage and send the mule up the surface. And they'd take them off up there, and the mules would stay on surface for so long.
Why did they do that?
Somebody said to protect their eyes and that, so they wouldn't go blind.
Do Did you see this when you were growing up?
No, I didn't see it myself because that was before my time.
Mm-hmm. But your dad described it?
Yes. I don't know how long he worked there. Not very long, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Because that was one of them mines that worked now and then shut down for years and then worked again and shut down.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's now April 11th, and we're continuing the interview with Lowell Smale, and this again is happening at his home at 100 Marble Street in Ishpeming, Michigan. Let's pick up with why it was that that people chose to work in the mine. Were there any particular reasons for that?
Well, it was a steady job and a steady income most of the time. And it was nice working in underground because the temperature remained the same all year round. You didn't have to shovel snow in underground.
Do you have any thoughts on what other kinds of jobs there were? If a guy didn't work in the mine, what other kinds of choices would he have?
Well, they could work for the city, or work for the county, or work in the woods. Even. Then there was some construction going on. Be a carpenter or mason.
But the construction jobs would tend to be on again, off again?
Yes. You were never sure of a job for a year, see. Work 5-6 months, and then you're off, and then work again, off.
Last time we talked a little bit about the routine when you would get to work, but I didn't ask you if you could describe for me what the dry looked like and where things were stored.
Okay, in a clean clothes dry, you went in, you had benches, and above the bench there was a chain that ran up to the ceiling, maybe 30 feet high. You'd lower your basket, and all the baskets you put your clean clothes in and hang your shirts and that underneath it, then hoist it up. Then you'd go into the dirty clothes dry and you let your basket down. You'd put your dirty clothes on. Then you'd hoist your empty basket up. But during the night, when the clothes were left overnight in the dry, they'd be dry for the next morning when you went to work. That's the reason they had them hoisted up so high. More heat up above.
Did every miner have a padlock or some kind of a lock on his own basket?
No, anybody could lower your basket. We didn't have locks or anything on them. There was very little stuff missing. Once in a while you'd get something missing, but very seldom.
What about time clocks?
Well, we didn't have a time clock. But when you went down an underground, you picked up a brass check with your number on when you went down, and then when you came up at night, you threw it in a box. Sometimes you'd get 8-10 guys together, and they'd take all the checks, and then they'd throw them all in the box at once when we came up. But once in a while, somebody would get smart, monkeying around, getting on a cage, and somebody had dropped the checks. And then when you went up, you had a report that you lost your check. So they got kind of mad about that, you might say, because they had to punch out new checks then for the men. So you didn't do that very often.
Now, would the check then have performed two purposes?
Yes, it'd tell when you went down and be sure that you came up. If your check didn't come in at night, the timekeeper checking the checks would notify higher authority and they'd check in to see where you were.
So then the timekeeper would use those checks to enter which guys had worked their 8-hour shift?
Right, that's what they were used for.
All right, one of the things that I wanted to touch on a little bit when you were talking about blasting underground. Can you describe what it was like when there was a blast and what it smelled like?
Well, it was awful smoky after you let the blast off. Well, sometimes it took hours to clear the air. And then the next time maybe you blasted and the smoke would go out right away. But it smelled like sulfur quite a bit when it blasted.
There was another side effect that you described for me about handling nitroglycerin. Can you tell me what that was?
Well, you get a nitro headache from handling it with bare hands. And you'd really get a bad headache. It make you sick almost to your stomach sometimes. But once you got used to it and wore your rubber gloves when you were handling it, then it wasn't too bad.
How long would a headache like that last?
Oh, 5-6 hours. Sometimes 8 hours, all depends how lucky you were, you might say.
One of the things that you told me the last time was that a lot of the color of things underground was red. Would that be like a cherry red, a crayon red? What color red was it?
Oh, a dull red, more or less.
Then when you started working in the engine house, was there a distinct difference in your work environment from what it was underground?
Oh, yes, it was spotlessly clean up there. The only thing you had trouble with was noise at first, but then they made us air-conditioned cubbyhole, you might say. Then we had air conditioning and it was cut down quite a bit on the noise.
Another question is the level of light underground. Could you describe what that was like and whether it was different depending on where you were in the mine?
Well, it all depends where you were, but mostly on the level, they had a bare light bulb hanging every 50 feet, 75 feet. So you had more or less a dull light all the way through the drift. Then when you get up in the working place, they had lights up there, but they weren't so close together. They maybe 100 feet. That's where your headlamp came in handy when you were up in there working.
And how far could you see with your headlamp?
Well, the beginning of the shift, say a good 100 feet. By the end of the shift, sometimes you'd be down to 50 feet.